Ruby had been marooned outside Mike Mitchell's office for going on 45 minutes. Perched on a hard wooden chair under a wanly flickering electric light. Not for the American, a floor of grand offices in the modern splendor of the Rockefeller Center. Instead, America's fourth most popular weekly news magazine made do with a third floor walk up on a dismal stretch of East 47th Street. And if anyone complained about the scarcity of telephones or the need to wear an overcoat between November and April, Mr. Mitchell just gave them the look, which everyone knew was shorthand for, if you don't want this job, there are 10 people who'll take your place in a heartbeat. She hadn't so much as shed her coat that morning when his secretary had summoned her. And she was glad now, with her stomach flipping and flopping, that she'd skipped breakfast yet again. Mr. Mitchell had said hello to her on her first day, and had nodded at her twice in the hallway. But for all of that, she hadn't been sure he even knew who she was. And now he wanted to see her. She'd thought she was doing well at the magazine. Already she'd earned 2 bylines of her own. And her name had appeared as a contributor to 5 other pieces. She'd even moved beyond the usual sob sister fare on her most recent story, a profile of a family of Belgian refugees who were still in shock at their country's calamitous defeat. Maybe she'd stepped on someone's toes. It wasn't hard to do, since your average newsman was as touchy as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Had she spoken out of turn at the last editorial meeting? Made the mistake of interrupting one of the old guard? Mr. Mitchell had been awfully quiet this morning, which in itself was disconcerting. After her first few days at the magazine, Ruby had grown used to his hoarse bellow, which was a constant bass note amid the cacophony of the newsroom. Even when his office door was closed, which wasn't often, it was easy to hear him above the clattering of typewriters and the jangling of telephones, shouting out his approval or disdain in equal measure. But a quiet Mike Mitchell? She'd no idea if that was good or bad.
Miss Sutton, still there?
Yes, sir, she answered, and gritting her teeth a little, she inched into his office. She'd assumed it would be messy like the managing editor's office, which was overflowing with heaps of paper and books and marked up page proofs. But Mr. Mitchell's desk was nearly bare. 2 telephones, a lone piece of paper centered just so, an old coffee can stuffed with pens and compositor's pencils, and nothing else. He'd been looking out his window, though the view beyond was hardly more than a plain brick wall. And as his chair swiveled around, she forced herself to stand perfectly still. A strand of hair was tickling her cheek, but she resisted the urge to tuck it behind her ear. Fidgeting with it would make her look nervous, and to look nervous would be to imply she'd done something wrong. It was one of the first lessons she'd learned growing up at St. Mary's, and one of the hardest. She cleared her throat and waited. And then, when he still said nothing, she spoke up. You asked me to come and see you.
Yes.
He indicated the chair in front of his desk.
Sit down. And remind me, how long have you been with us?
About 6 months, sir.
You're happy here? Settling in well?
Yes, sir.
Bill Peterson likes you. Says you work hard and keep your eyes and ears open.
That came as a relief. The managing editor was pleasant enough, but was a miser with compliments. It'll do was the highest praise she'd ever heard from the man.
I've been reading your work. Not much of a stylist, are you? But then we don't have a lot of room for that.
The American employed a distinctive house style that read like an expanded version of the cablese the wire services still employed to save money on overseas telegrams. Succinct, crisp, and to the point. It treated adverbs like caviar, rare and best regarded with suspicion, and ruthlessly excised any attempts by staff writers to spread their poet's wings. Mr. Mitchell leaned back in his chair, his hands clasped behind his head, and regarded her steadily.
I've an idea to put to you. It would mean a big change.
It took a moment for her to process his words. I don't understand. Didn't you call me in because I've done something wrong?
Hell no. Why'd you think that? If you foul up, I'll let you know right away.
Sitting forward, he pushed a piece of paper across his desk and motioned that she should pick it up.
I just got this from Walter Kaczmarek, the editor of Picture Weekly in London. Go on. Read it.